A Documentary Channel original. Lights illuminate stacks of brown, beige, and blue film canisters in a dark room. A label on one of the cases reads, Steppenwolf. A howling wolf statue stands in front of a red-lit wall. A man opens one of the canisters and takes out the reel. He turns a dial on a projector, and a bright light inside illuminates. The man carefully threads the tape into the projector and adjusts the lens.
I played bass in a band called Steppenwolf.
Through the gaps in the spinning reel, the projected film reflects on the man's eyes. Archival footage of bright clouds and snowy mountains plays. Dust swirls in front of the projector's lens. In the footage, a man holding a video camera sits on a plane.
Taking pictures out of plane windows is not exciting.
The plane flies over a desert.
Especially when you're in the desert.
A man in sunglasses drinks a beer on the plane.
It's probably one of the most exciting films next to Scarface.
The sun shines on a rocky island.
An elephant on its side. Where the hell are we? This plane's too small. I don't think I'd make a great filmmaker because I don't even remember what I shot.
The pilot speaks to the eight passengers. In the present, the man fast forwards through the footage.
How do these films end up on top of each other, end to end, and front to beginning, and beginning backwards?
Clips of the man wearing sunglasses, wearing a wolf pelt, and then walking through a forest flash past. He has a brown shag and a thick mustache.
Then you have everybody sitting on the curb.
John Kay, lead singer, Steppenwolf.
We are Steppenwolf. And so when we get up on the stage, until we leave the stage, this is our turf.
Now for all of you teenagers, long-haired Steppenwolf, rock and roll.
Alice Cooper hums.
Born to be Wild, it's one of the best songs any rock band ever made.
They were like your older brother that was going to tell you some nasty secrets.
Head out on the highway.
An Easy Rider film poster comes into focus.
When the image meets the song, you get a double whammy, and that's Easy Rider with Born to Be Wild. In a way, we're all chasing that kind of feeling.
You know, Woody.
That song stands out.
Red light flickers behind the howling wolf statue. The band plays with the wolf pelt.
Heavy metal thunder.
Heavy metal thunder.
First time anybody ever heard that term, heavy metal.
Steppenwolf was the first arena rock band.
A plane flies past Shea Stadium.
It was proto-punk.
I heard rock and roll for the first time, and I quickly went for the hard stuff. The Beatles, everybody knew, so kind of, oh yeah, okay, I like the Beatles, but I really like the Rolling Stones. But that came Born to Be Wild. Immediately, I was like, yeah, this is the shit.
Born to be wild.
Yellow text on a black background reads, Born to be Wild, the story of Steppenwolf. A film by Oliver Schwemm. A soft spotlight illuminates a skull on a black background, viewed through a kaleidoscope. The skull doubles, turns, overlaps, and merges with itself. The sun shines on the coastal community of Santa Barbara, California. John Kay, a man with gray hair and sunglasses, approaches a mansion. Sean Kay, John's daughter.
When I've gone to shows, there was a repetitive thing that was going on, which were people grabbing me, you know, and saying, oh, your dad was the first band I ever dropped acid to, or he was the first band I ever smoked pot to, or it was the first band I, you know, had sex to, whatever. It was a lot of firsts. Their music was a rite of passage.
In archival footage, a band performs in a recording studio. The drummer wears a skull ring. Alice Cooper, rock musician.
You hear that sound and you think, that's not a European band. That's not an English band. That's an American hot rod band.
4 out of 5 were Canadian.
Sang down in here, you know. He wasn't trying to sing like Freddie Mercury. His voice matched what they were doing.
In the footage, John wraps both hands around the microphone and holds it up to his mouth. Goldie smokes a cigarette while playing the organ.
Well, I'm nobody's slave. I'm nobody's master. Time is mine. Morning, night, and afternoon.
The guitarist plays with a pick. Jello Biafra, singer-songwriter, Dead Kennedys, 1978 to 1986.
I thought he just had those shades to look badass. And then there was Goldie's hair. Never seen hair like that in our lives. Wow, this band is insane. It's so iconic.
Goldie has a voluminous cloud of curly brown hair. Cameron Rowe, film director.
What Steppenwolf represented in so many ways was the next step beyond bubblegum, sweetness.
Photos of the band posing scroll past.
They look dirty, but not in a hippie sort of way. Like they're just hungover and crawled out of a sewer. They look like a gang that's about to come out and kick your ass.
They were more interested in Ferraris, blondes, and switchblades than they were in peace and love.
In archival footage, a motorcycle gang drives through a city.
Los Angeles at that time, this is a gritty town. It was prostitutes and serial killers and drug dealers in between. And they came up in that, and they represented that, coming out of the ashes and being tough. Now let me see you, and that's where the hard rock came from.
Rolling Stone called them a biker band.
I think it's more Americana than anything else.
Goldie aims a rifle on a moving train. Band logos featuring a wolf and the U.S. flag flash past.
I didn't know if they were from Germany. I didn't know where they were from. They were just, to me, everybody was from L.A.
You know, the original band wasn't together for very long. Like at that time, you've got the drugs involved, you've got the egos involved, you've got their ages involved, 24, 25, 26, you know. With all due respect, it's a shit show. I mean, there's no way that that's gonna go smoothly.
A man waves from a white Chrysler Imperial.
Now we're on Sunset Boulevard.
Clips of a white Dodge Coronet and a cherry red Allard scroll past.
That's Jerry's Allard's. There's only one in the world. Jerry was a great drummer. Now the tires start moving. Yeah, there's Goldie. Yeah, he's playing the tires. That's what he does. And there's Michael. He crashes into everything. He's carrying a bag of cocaine.
A motorcyclist drives past.
Could be me. Hello?
He takes off the helmet.
Yes, me, Nick St. Nicholas. Okay, this is John's house. He is the wolf. Mr. Wolf. There you go. One, two, three.
In the footage, John jumps, flaps his arms, and walks down the front steps. In the present, John descends a staircase in the mansion and enters a grand home studio. He sits at a desk, turns on the computer, and opens Google Maps.
Tells it. Ah, yeah. Tells it Kaliningrad Air. I was born there, but I was only, I don't know how many months old, until my mother left. She got the notification that my father had been killed in Russia, and the Russian army was advancing on East Prussia.
In black and white footage, explosions rage and tanks drive through snowy landscapes. In color footage, Steppenwolf performs in a TV studio.
But they tell me the Baltic coast is full of amber, and the land was green before the tanks came.
My mother took me in her arms and got on a train that wound up in a town called Arnstadt because the tracks ahead had been bombed. We were given shelter.
Shortly thereafter, where we were became Communist East Germany.
John had quite a history. I think there's probably some anger, and he certainly had a lot to deal with when he was a kid.
Little John stares solemnly in a photo.
My mother noticed that when the sun was in my face, I would start to cry. So that's when she took me to an ophthalmologist. He said, this is the most extreme case of color blindness, you know, we've ever seen. But with it comes a bonus, which is extreme light sensitivity. I'm legally blind.
Solemn little John, wearing sunglasses, poses with a smiling boy.
But he also said that maybe the boy's vision improves when he has a better diet. We were on food rations at the time, so my mother decided to get out from behind the so-called Iron Curtain of communism.
My eyes, to some degree, were the reason why she started thinking about escape.
In the present, John takes off his sunglasses and smiles.
It was dark. We were in somebody's house. We were going to be smuggled across by a couple of brothers who worked along the railroad and knew the patterns of the police dog patrols. One of them noticed I had a cough. He said, now, when we get close to where we're going to go across, you're going to have to be totally quiet.
In archival footage, two people cross a field, and a guard tower rises over tall trees.
And so they clipped a couple of barbed wire things, and, you know, and so now get across to the other side and run.
When you get to the other side, just you run like hell. Hey, you, keep your head down. Don't you look around. Please don't make a sound. If they should find you now, the man would shoot you down.
Hanover, West Germany, 1950s. Children play in the ruins of a bombed building, and a German language sign hangs on a wall.
We wound up in Hanover, which had been reduced to rubble by bombing.
Matthias Greffrath, childhood neighbor. We often played in the rubble. We built little houses with the bricks.
Streng verboten, natürlich.
This was, of course, strictly forbidden.
And
we played soccer in the ruins next to our house. We drew the goalposts on the walls. He had difficulties with his eyesight, and at that age, kids are very brutal. One day, one of the older boys told him, Joachim, today you can have the penalty shot. And he put a brick right behind the ball. That was extremely nasty.
And they all run off.
A boy wearing sunglasses stands in front of a chalk-drawn net.
2-3 days later, see the same kid. Bam! What was that for? 3 days ago. That stuff stopped.
The boy leans against the wall. He was a bit scary. He had dark glasses. But as a kid, I didn't know it was because of his eye problems. And he didn't really talk to me. He hardly talked to anyone. He was a loner. Little John stares somberly in a family photo. Klaus Meine, lead singer, Scorpions. Everyone turned towards the future and to rebuilding everything. The Schlager music was an expression of relaxation, finally.
Neue deutsche Entspannung.
The radio plays as the boy's mother cooks in their kitchen.
My mother, every morning, she'd have the radio on fixing breakfast. And they had Schlager music. Some of it was enough to make you want to hurl.
The boy's mother serves him a boiled egg. In black and white footage, a young woman with short dark hair smiles while singing into microphones.
When I was about 12, fiddling around on the radio dial, I came across AFN, the Armed Forces Radio Network. And I heard Little Richard.
The boy turns a knob on the radio. In archival footage, Little Richard performs for a lively audience.
You know, when people talk about they had a religious experience when the spirit moved them or something, I heard this guy, what was that? I had chicken skin, you know, goosebumps from head to toe.
Children playing drums march in a parade.
And I'm in Germany at age 12, and I understand that they want to live as close to what had almost been destroyed for them. And I'm sitting there saying, there's got to be more than that.
Waves roll towards a sandy beach bordering Ventura, California. The wind rustles tall, leafy trees surrounding a large white house with a terracotta roof. In the open garage, Nick St. Nicholas, bassist Steppenwolf, unlocks a drawer in a filing cabinet and yanks it open.
Do you know why we didn't play Woodstock? You don't know? Did you know we were booked on Woodstock? On the second day, at sundown, I was all excited. And John calls the management, I'm not doing it.
He mimes holding a phone to his ear.
John.
He lifts his palms and looks around in disbelief.
So management got more money up front to do the Boston Gardens.
He slumps all the way down to the floor. A straw hat balances on a pole in front of a parked motorcycle. Nick tosses folders into a red wagon. He pulls the wagon out of the garage and through the yard. A U.S. flag waves amongst the greenery. Later, Nick sets a framed photo of a sailboat passing in front of houses on his dining table.
Yeah, this is Rosenstrasse 13.
This is Rosenstrasse 13, Plön,
in Germany. Und mein Zimmer,
and my room was here.
My dad, he wasn't there a lot of times. I was wondering, where's my dad?
Photos of Nick as a baby scroll past.
They would tell me he's out at sea.
In the present, Nick holds the photo of a ship.
All the men on the ship, can you hear me?
He stares at the photo.
This is your captain's son.
He points at the photo.
I see you. Do you see me?
Maren Kosbaum Cook, Nick's sister.
My father was captain in the destroyer escorts. He was fighting for his country. As a matter of fact, when England declared war on Germany, he said, this is the end. We're not prepared.
Nick opens a large safe.
Hitler was not liked by the German Navy.
He takes a box of letters out of the safe.
Unser Führer, der Reiter ist da. Oberleutnant Kosbaum. Torpedo boat, Leopard. Wilhelmshaven. I had a picture with Hitler and my dad standing on the bridge, and I always wondered about that. Like, he stood like 2 feet away from Hitler and could have taken Hitler out right then and there.
In the photo, Nick's father stands next to Hitler as he salutes a crowd. The photo of the family home comes into focus.
This house was always in my heart. I always have dreams at night when I can't go to sleep. I think of the house and the laughter and the giggling. And then I can remember hearing the bombs, the 100, 200, 300 planes overhead, and they would grab me and take me to the basement. We would hear, like, thuds, boom, thuds, boom.
In archival footage, fighter jets drop bombs.
I was 9 when I was told that we're going to Canada.
Nick looks at a drawing of himself as a boy. 2 blonde boys smile in a photo.
And I said,
Mother, what is a Canada? What is that?
That was in 1951 we crossed over because my mother was concerned about the Russians coming too close.
The smiling family poses on a ship's deck.
My mother started saying, you know, I keep getting letters from my brother Willie and his family in Canada, and they're doing well. One thing led to another. We're going to Canada.
Blue-gray clouds extend across the sky over Toronto, Canada. The metropolis sprawls along a waterfront. Sunlight reflects on a glass high-rise building. John stands at a crosswalk in the city center.
When we arrived in Toronto, it did not look promising. The city of Toronto at the time was like a very large, small town. meaning, yeah, it was fairly large in size, but it was still languishing from the old colonial British laws.
John Bass's heritage houses.
Such as Saturday night, everything shuts down from then until Monday. Everything. It was sort of like you had entered a time machine and went backwards, you know? They called it back then Toronto the Good.
In archival footage, a congregation leaves a church and a choir rehearses.
They couldn't pronounce Joachim, so the teacher, he said, your name in this class is going to be John, okay, John? Yeah, we only have 14 other Johns, but okay, fine. John is fine. But it was still John Kaledat. I said, very simple, John K. They said, well, you know, kid, you can't read the blackboard because of your vision, but the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, they have a thing called sight-saving classes.
John gives a talk to the CNIB Foundation.
In March 58, we arrived here. And I have to tell you, at the time, you know, here's the kid that saw the Hollywood movies and was crazy about the rock and roll movies with Little Richard and all these other people in it, and I arrive in Toronto, the good. Someone at the CNIB said, we're going to loan you a Wollensack tape recorder so that you can play talking books.
I didn't give a rat's knuckle about talking books.
I want to find out what I sound like. And I sat down and I played a very simple, slow-moving Hank Williams song called I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. And, you know, you hear that lonesome whippoorwill.
You hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is winding low. I'm so lonesome I could cry.
I'm so lonesome I could cry. Well, you rewind it, and here it comes. And I'm here to tell you I was appalled by what came out of that speaker. Said, something's wrong with this machine. I don't, you know, I can't possibly sound this bad.
John walks in Toronto, Canada.
You know, you had to find others who were interested in music like you. It was really a slow process.
In archival footage, a family boards a ship.
I had my Canadian citizenship, and we lived on Queen Street, which wasn't the best part of Toronto. And I ended up sleeping in a bed with four other kids.
Nick St. Nicholas and three of his siblings pose on a staircase.
I did anything I could do to keep out of school. I couldn't stand it. I got beat up by the teachers. They say, well, you... Jeremy Kassbaum cussing all your gas and all your bombs. What? What are you talking about? My mom, you know, she comes from a family where men, if they're going to play musical instruments, they're not going to end up in a band. And when I asked for a guitar, I said, well, Elvis Presley, he plays guitar. He said, why are you listening to a truck driver? So they said, okay, we'll compromise, we'll make a deal. They bought me an accordion so that I could learn it and then play the songs they like to hear.
Nick pulls his wagon along the pier in Ventura, California. He opens a case in the wagon, takes out an accordion and plays on a bench.
Kind of disgusted because it didn't show me any signs of going anywhere. I threw it in the lake.
In a photo, teenage Nick sits on a table at a beach.
Klaus Karl Kassbaum, with those initials, I wouldn't get very far because KKK. Somebody pointed out to me, you know, your initials are KKK. I said, well, no, they're not. They're NSTN. Nick St. Nicholas.
Nick puts on a pair of sunglasses and looks up. John, wearing sunglasses, walks past a building covered with graffiti and enters a musical instrument store.
Wake up, Mama. Gotta share some news.
I discovered blues and I started writing songs.
Your daddy got them?
I was a white young boy, and while the blues was something I gravitated to right away, I did feel kind of, am I stepping onto somebody else's cultural exclusive domain?
If I can't take you, I believe I'll take the girl next door.
He picks up a guitar.
Hey now, darling.
And I expressed myself through the blues idiom rather than just being a white copy of somebody else's original recordings.
Back to where the climate suits my clothes.
Taj Mahal, blues musician.
I had met John Kay at the Newport Folk Festival. So, you know, we took our guitars out and started seeing what each guy played, and we found some stuff that we could really work with, you know.
In archival footage, groups of young men play music outdoors.
It's never to put the blues on to you. It's to lift the blues off of everybody.
The Beatles ride in a limo.
Then the British invasion with the Beatles came.
The Beatles give an interview.
Toronto was at the nexus of American music and British music.
Bob Ezrin, music producer.
When people speak of the cultural capitals of the world, they go London, New York, LA, go right over top of us. And yet, if you take it on a per capita basis, the people that have come out of Toronto, you know, we're punching way above our weight class.
In black and white footage, young men and women dance energetically in a club.
Toronto is certainly a most swinging place.
Gordon Lightfoot, Movin'.
Moving across the town, the skyline grows.
Toronto had its own sort of bohemian beatnik area, the Yorkville Village.
Hey, what's your story?
And it was a magnet for those that just felt out of place in the regular neighborhoods. And it was a real feel of community.
From Avenue Road, around the corner, you're dealing with hippies and folk music people. And then Gordon Lightfoot playing in the Riverboat. Then it's Joni Anderson, who's Joni Mitchell, and Neil Young.
Joni Mitchell, The Way It Is.
As you got closer to Yonge Street, you got a little harder edged. And inside was this pounding rock music.
Clips of people dancing, neon signs, and a guitarist playing flash past.
There was a matinee performance. And there, Ronnie Hawkins and the Hawks. And we underage kids, we were permitted to sit off to the one side of the dance floor. They would only serve us, you know, Coke and this, whatever. And we would hear these guys. And they were unbelievable. Well, I was hanging around with greasers and leather jackets. We would bootleg. We would go to the Canadian liquor control boards. I put on my trench coat and dark glasses. I passed for 21, and we would deliver booze to kids from the high school. I really started to be kind of a semi-juvenile delinquent. It was good that I had the music as a sort of focus to guide me.
Photos of young Nick playing guitar scroll past.
I had the first rock and roll band in the Yorkville Village. The beatniks would try to kick me out.
Black and white footage of an early concert by the Sparrows in 1965 plays. Young people smile and dance while the band plays energetically on stage. In a magazine, Nick poses with the three other band members.
Bass player, manager, agent, travel agent, driver, you name it, there's me.
An archival document titled The Sparrows reads, Nick St. Nicholas, bassist, vocalist, and composer.
This song is Mars Bonfire, who wrote Born to be Wild. This is Jerry. Jerry Edmonton is Mars' Bonfire's brother. He played the drums on all the Steppenwolf albums. Goldie came into the group. He was a shoe salesman.
Would you like to be the Stones, the Beatles? You want the money from us?
No, we want the money, but we want to be the Sparrows, you know.
Nick St. Nicholas was the leader, and eventually we had a falling out with the singer. Luckily, John Kay was performing as a solo blues singer in Toronto.
I asked to have him in the band, Mars Bonfire. I said, no. He didn't look the part. He didn't look British. I said, well, wait a minute. He was a German. And so we talked German. He and I became friends.
Nick wasn't the greatest bass player, but he was a very good networker, and that was important.
In black and white footage, the Sparrows perform on Through the Eyes of Tomorrow, CBC TV, in 1966.
Had a couple of fairly good-sized Canadian hits on the radio. Once I joined them, we became more and more blues-directed.
In a magazine, photos of the band members border the title, Sounds of the Sparrow.
They're the greatest in the world.
You want one of them for your boyfriend?
Sure.
How would you like to marry a sparrow?
It'd be a riot.
I was a waitress, and on the side, I did some modeling. And, you know, my English wasn't that good. And then I met John, and he followed me home and moved in that night. And 55 years later, here we are.
John's wife, Yuta Kay.
In our studio, three members of the Sparrow, Nick St. Nicholas, John Kay, and Dennis Edmonton. And Dr. Carl Stern, chief psychiatrist at the St. Mary's Hospital in Montreal.
Do you feel that you're escaping responsibility by doing this? Do you agree with this?
No, not really.
In the black and white interview footage, Nick stares thoughtfully.
Well, no. I don't have too much to say.
Do you believe yourself?
John was a little more worldly than all of us. He understood things on a higher level than we did. We were just naive kids.
You're not.
I don't think I'm a nonconformist in the sense of the word where I do things just to be different. If I happen to like something that is different from the rest of, you know, other people's opinion, I will do it.
At the time, Canada's music industry was nowhere near as developed like it is now. So we kind of sensed that we had gone as far as we could in Canada, and we thought we'd take a chance in the United States.
So we packed up the station wagon and all of our gear in the U-Haul, and we went to Los Angeles.
Problem, I was the only legal driver. This drug dealer gave me three trucker's pills. These are called Black Beauties. Truckers take them. The longer they drive, the more money they make.
In archival footage, the Sparrows drive through the countryside. Nick films from the front passenger seat.
Hours going by, driving going on, and going into Arizona, the road started turning red.
A desert landscape flashes past the car window.
Cactuses flying by and all these tropical plants I've never seen before. I've only seen maple trees.
The road extends ahead. At night, a vehicle's turn signal flashes in the darkness.
They all slept while I stayed awake and drove 62 and a half hours to get to Hollywood and get to the Tropicana Motel on Santa Monica Boulevard, where all the bands stayed. They offered a lot for little money.
Mars Bonfire, a.k.a. Dennis Edmonton, guitarist, the Sparrows.
We all had one or two rooms that we rented, but next to us was what could be considered a shaman. He had been in Mexico and taken the mushrooms, everything, and he really got us into it. So I took LSD, and against the advice that everyone gave me before, which was just stay there, I wandered off.
In archival footage, a person walks down a hotel hallway and calls the elevator. Later, they ride in a car driving through Los Angeles, California.
And I went to some movie theater, which was playing avant-garde, cutting-edge movies. And then I felt like I had just collapsed on the floor, and everybody gathered around wondering, you know, what was wrong with me? And that feeling was so intense that to this day, I'm not 100% sure I ever got off the floor if I'm just down there dreaming all this.
Beautiful flowers.
A field of pink flowers scrolls past.
They gave me a little purple vial, tiny little pill. I took it.
Aren't they beautiful flowers?
And all the plants started moving around the pool area. I thought I was in another world. All of a sudden, I got shaking hands with plants, making friends. Somebody had to run after me and tell me, Nick, it's not a good idea to shake hands with plants.
Beautiful. Aren't they beautiful?
The flowers fade to Nick's face.
We just found ourselves in a new world.
A person wrapped in blankets stands in a field of flowers.
And we've played the Summer of Love.
For a long time, everything was harmonious within the band because we basically had this sort of three musketeer attitude. It's almost like a military platoon, you know, everything's done together.
The five members pose in front of a colorful mural.
We went to San Francisco. We played a lot there. There were the big ballrooms. And then there was a place called the Sausalito Arc. We played with the group that Janis Joplin was with. And the Doors, they would make these incredible psychedelic posters where you'd have to really kind of enter into the poster.
Posters with illegible writing flash past.
It's hard to read all the people that are going to show up performing. Because you'd have to kind of squint back, and then if you took a tip of acid, you'd be able to read it a lot better and find out who's playing, where.
The psychedelic experience took us away from what could be considered the 2.5-minute structured hit, especially because the audience was utterly stoned too, and they would listen to a piece 20 minutes long. And I start taking a lot of LSD, and I wake up one morning, and I realize I'm Mars Bonfire. It sounds crazy. My heart was more and more into the songwriting rather than the performing. So I told the band, I'm just going to leave. Then finally, they break up too.
John rides in the back of a car driving on a highway.
When the Sparrows broke up, in Los Angeles, I'm looking around for what to do next. And literally next door, the next building over, slightly bigger place than ours, a girlfriend of Jutta's, also from Toronto, moves in with her new husband, Gabriel Meckler, born and raised in Israel, an excellent pianist, songwriter, and record producer. And he hears some reel-to-reel recordings, live recordings of the Sparrows. He said, well, why don't you form another band? You know, call those guys up and see if you can put something together.
In archival footage, the new five-man band performs in front of a billboard reading Steppenwolf, exclusively on Dunhill. Young John smokes while being interviewed.
Our producer had read the book Steppenwolf and made the suggestion of using the same name for the group. Now, none of us had read the book. All we knew was that the word Steppenwolf looked good in print and sounded good, even in English.
The band and a dancer perform on top of a plane. John approaches a blue and white house.
So Jutta and I lived upstairs. That was the bedroom, the washroom, and the kitchen.
Strange to be here.
Michael Monarch, guitarist, Steppenwolf.
We were rehearsing underneath John's little tiny apartment in Hollywood in a little one-car garage. with an oily sand pit in the center, and we were all set up around it.
And when we opened these doors, because it was so incredibly hot in there, it was in the summer, the sound would bounce right against that opposite side of the street and bounce down the street. And here comes the LAPD again.
I turned the amp up pretty loud, and they were asking me to turn it down, and you know, I went over like I was turning it down, but I really didn't turn it down, just letting it be that kind of raunchy, kind of overly distorted sound. That was a kind of a new sound, I guess.
Steppenwolf performs on a stage in a TV studio. A diverse group of young people dance energetically in front of the stage.
Well, in light of how historic this rather humble little structure is, nevertheless, it's the birthplace of Steppenwolf, and I would like the commemorative plaque of this creation to be emblazed here on this door. Another cultural citadel of West Hollywood.
Clouds streak the sky above the city. Steppenwolf performs in black and white footage.
All of their early stuff was great. They had found this big ocean of music, and they were diving in and coming up with this and say, oh, we like this, and then we play this, and go back again, and there was always more.
In archival footage, John smiles while spinning, and the band members walk past a sunny window.
They knew where the groove was coming from. They could play the rhythms. They were very good.
Clips of the band performing in a studio flash past. John nods to the beat. Goldie wears a gold ring on his pinky finger. Jerry shakes his shaggy brown hair. Goldie smokes. The camera swings and the footage shifts to a winding residential road. In archival footage, a young woman with long brown hair poses on a beach.
This is Randy St. Nicholas. And Randy and I met back in 1968.
A puppy chases Nick across the beach. Randy St. Nicholas, Nick's ex-wife.
Well, I was 15, met Nick at the beach, and he invited us to go to a party. My dad dropped me off at the Tropicana Hotel. There was quite a lot of people there, and we had a lot of fun. And then Nick got my phone number. Somehow I wound up married to him. I was 17 when we got married.
Nick and Randy kiss the puppy and each other.
The reason I'm not on camera is because I'm pretty shy of it. That is why you're hearing my voice, but you're not seeing me.
The blue water rolls towards the sandy shore.
Oh, keep it shut. Don't talk. Don't do nothing. Don't do nothing. Don't take my picture. Do not take my picture.
Randy looks directly at the camera and smiles broadly, surrounded by sunlight. In the present, Mars puts on a yellow jacket and grabs a pair of blue sneakers and a hot pink hat.
Mars is living in a boarding house, you know, rented a room, and, you know, staying up late to write, and he can't make any noise there. And he writes Born to be Wild.
My demo was just me on guitar, and because I was in an apartment, I couldn't even plug the guitar in. So it was a Telecaster unplugged, so it sounds more like a banjo. And my very, very weak voice, it had the softness of a ballad, but the tempo of the Born to Be Wild hit.
He walks on Dead Man's Creek Trail.
Get your motor running, head out on the highway, looking for adventure in whatever comes our way.
He approaches a mountain.
Let's do that new one, see how far we get with that, all right? Okay.
Born to be Wild, first demo version 1967. Clips of desert mountains scroll past. A lone car drives across a sandy plateau.
Put your motor on. Head out on the highway.
reaches the mountaintop, raises his arms triumphantly, and stares into the distance.
He liked the song. A lot of people asked me, was it obvious that that was going to be the hit song on the album? And the answer is no. Not to us, not to the producer, not to the engineer, and not to the record companies. They weren't sure what to do with a underground psychedelic blues band, I guess you would call it.
I get this assignment from Dunhill Records, and they wanted me to get pictures of this new band they had. I introduced myself, and there was something about it right away. I knew that I like these guys.
The band poses at the bottom of a staircase. Tom Gundelfinger, photographer.
With Steppenwolf, over the next 6 or 7 years, I was really able to express myself that way in terms of my art, because psychedelia was in full blast. The whole idea was just to distort reality just a little bit.
Rolls of black and white film negatives of the band scroll past.
He said, well, I have this idea for shooting you guys. We're going to go to the cactus garden in Beverly Hills on Santa Monica Boulevard, and I'm going to shoot you guys with infrared film, which makes all the colors go weird, different. I said, hey, I'm totally colorblind.
John shrugs. The sun shines on a variety of cactuses in the garden.
Everybody's wearing sort of fairly flowery things and stuff, and I have more of a, not military-type shirt, but I'm the one who doesn't, you know, have any of those flower children attire thing. Maybe because of my background, the war, and, you know, I was a little more skeptical about this flower power thing.
In the photos, John wears a plain jacket and shirt.
When you focus with infrared film, you don't use the same settings on the lens that you would with traditional film. I didn't know that. And it was a little bit soft. But because it was printed on the foil, it looked great. Nobody ever said to me, oh, it's out of focus.
The album cover reads, Steppenwolf.
So a single was important, and the question was, what is it going to be?
I certainly remember the first time Born to Be Wild. It imprinted on me, which is when I went to see Easy Rider. When I heard it in that context, and on those massive speakers in a movie theater. Don't forget, we had these little record players and things sounded like this. It wasn't until you got into the theater with subwoofers and big speakers that you went, whoa, that's heavy metal thunder.
Easy Rider plays at a drive-in movie theater at sunset. In the movie, Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper drive motorcycles through the desert on a sunny day.
Easy Rider was an independent movie, but it became a huge mainstream success and created culture in a lot of ways.
In the film, the actors drive into Arizona.
When you left the picture, what stayed with you more than any imagery or any one scene was Born to Be Wild. And that's why it was such a massive hit, I think.
We were contacted by, I can't remember, it was Peter Fonda or Dennis Hopper, saying, listen, we would like to use two of your songs. I wasn't really interested. And they said, well, they invited you to a private screening, so we went.
We were showing a rough cut, a working cut of Easy Rider to all the different musicians whose tunes were used in the show. Film ended, and there was labels, managers, agents, all there to stop their clients from making a deal with me. And John turned to me and said, is that in color? Far out, colorblind. I said, yeah. He said, show it to the Russians in black and white. It'll blow their minds.
Yay!
Peter Fonda claps at the 2004 Canada's Walk of Fame Gala.
It's an American classic. It certainly catapulted the song to the top of the charts and the fame.
You know, and the whole beginning of that movie is powerful with, you know, not only Born to Be Wild, but The Pusher. The Pusher is a Hoyt Axton song. You know, the way that Steppenwolf took it. Slow blues burn was great.
As the film plays at the drive-in, stars shine above the screen.
And all of a sudden it was, whoa, this is hardcore stuff. I smoked a lot of grass. I popped a lot of pills.
In the film, Dennis Hopper rolls up a bill and puts it into a plastic tube. In archival footage, Nick plays guitar while sitting on a windowsill.
I didn't smoke a lot of grass, pop a lot of pills. But I've never touched nothing that my spirit can't kill. They misinterpreted that as being drug dealers on the loose.
They probably got searched at every border just because of that song, you know. And you end up on the FBI list really quick if you do something subversive.
This was the band the mothers warned the kids not to go to see them. Don't go be, no. No, you're not going to go see that band Steppenwolf. And the more they said it, the more the kids wanted to see it.
You heard Steppenwolf and Steppenwolf II. Now Dunhill Records presents Steppenwolf's third and heaviest album, At Your Birthday Party.
A crowd gathers in a park.
Goldie is an enigma to me. How someone classically trained could play the organ the way he did is amazing. He's a genius.
The band performs in a studio and on a stage.
He developed this very percussive style. We used to call it his kangaroo style of playing.
Sonically, it was as heavy as anything anybody had ever heard. Suddenly, the organ was not a church instrument anymore.
Goldie lifts his hands high and brings them down quickly while playing.
And then Jared, he had this glaze on his face, and he was just... One of his fingers is bleeding. Bang! Stick splits right in half. Like that, grabs right over there and pulls another one. Like he's, you know, he had a quiver on each side, sticks, and didn't miss a beat.
A blonde woman arranges the band members with a German shepherd on a beach and then photographs them.
When I first saw Sparrow playing it, John was singing some songs, Nick was singing some songs. He wasn't as much of a front man as what he developed into. He developed into like a Jim Morrison, you know, front man.
Distorted clips of the band performing flash past.
After Easy Rider came out and our music became known in other parts of the world and we were making good money, you know, we were hitting on all cylinders.
Backstage after a show, John drinks a beer and smiles. Then the band leaves in a silver car.
We'd go out on tour, you know, with the presidential suites, the Learjets, Playboy limousines, and you get a little full of yourself.
In archival footage, a car drives on a street illuminated by neon signs.
They were rebels without trying to be rebels. You know, I mean, the Hells Angels used to come. They would police the stage. No one hired them.
The headline reads, a rough musical equivalent of Hells Angels. Clips from their 1969 European tour flash past. A mountain road. A woman in Köln, Düsseldorf. A chauffeur, Nick staring. The band filming each other from balconies. The Eiffel Tower. And Nick showing his chewed up food. The poster reads, Bath Festival of Blues and Progressive Music, 1970.
In England, at Bath, at the music festival there, they came on at night. The British Hells Angels had decided that they wanted to enjoy the band just themselves. So they cleared all the photographers from this fenced-in pit area. I had been mostly on stage during the day because I wanted to get all 150,000 people. And I can't get up there. So these are nasty-looking guys. So here's the guy who's kind of running the whole thing. He's got a World War II German, chrome German helmet on. And he's got a pole with a chain wrapped around it. And he's got about four teeth. And he's doing all this. I said, sir, I said, I'm the photographer for this band. Would you mind if I just stayed here and maybe I got one shot? He's looking at me like that. And he goes, this guy's cool. He's cool. Leave him.
I think Steppenwolf kind of stepped into this role of the motorcycle guys, maybe by accident.
Well, I think it was a cage for them. But at first it was a thrill. They probably had to work against that for a while, as well as leaning into it. So it's a dance that they did with that image.
Come on!
In a newspaper below a photo of the man in the chrome helmet, the caption reads, "The Angels, unappeased, wanted some hall-ass music." In archival footage, Goldie films on a dock.
Here comes everybody. Like, everybody. Everybody's on the boat. Okay, let's leave so we can be sick.
The band and several women board a sailboat.
Where the waves are coming. Left, right, tightness. I want to wear my bikini.
Nick gazes out at the water.
The guys that own this boat take passengers out, and it costs a fortune to rent this boat.
Goldie grabs a rope and grins.
Just live on this boat and take people out on it, get paid. Is there a better life than that? Yeah, unless you get a whole, like, a big group of dentists together pulling each other's teeth.
Randy and Nick kiss and grin.
Oh, yes, it was so beautiful. Ah, the wind, the waves, the weather.
John smiles at his toddler, Sean.
Kiss Daddy.
Yuta rocks Sean between her legs.
I think it was a welcomed surprise, put it that way. And it wasn't exactly an ideal time to start a family, but there I came along. And luckily, I believe it was Born to Be Wild, made it to the charts that year that I was born. So I like to joke that I was their lucky charm.
Wrapped in a towel, Sean stares curiously. The wind blows Randy's long brown hair.
I've had the privilege of seeing into the dynamics of what kind of makes them iconic, how they stay in that position, and it's something that's really intangible. The organic sort of love of music and just people coming together organically doing what they do. I think the minute that you sign a record deal, and the pressure is on to do all the things that you need to do, to tour, to continue to write hit songs, to create an aura about yourself so that someone in the band, if not every member, becomes a star. It's a big pressure. And so I think that pressure comes in, and it can do one of two things. It can either inspire people to greatness, or it can put the fear of God in you.
Waves rock the sailboat. Goldie takes a drag of a cigarette, exhales the smoke, and grins.
For most musicians during that time, it was all fun and going wild and doing all sorts of stuff. For John, because of his eyesight, it was more of a livelihood. And he was very, very focused on making this happen. I mean, John was kind of the lead guy there because that's just his nature, you know, to take command.
Smoke billows around John in a music video.
Being the band leader, so to speak, and the primary writer in the band, to juggle all those balls effectively was not always easy. There's an old cliche in the business, which is you have your whole life to prepare for your first album. But after that, if you're lucky and it's successful, you're like a hamster on a wheel.
Normally, you get that one song and then whatever. But then they came out with Magic Carpet Ride, which was another hit.
In the music video, John turns on an amp.
I have to say that Magic Carpet Ride is always a go-to dance song.
Yuta wears a white crochet mini dress.
I know nothing about it other than my mom is wearing a very short, very cute crochet dress. And, you know, the quality of that video is so terrible, but they kind of doctored it a little bit, and I think it's great.
It was one day, I mean, one afternoon. We did that shoot. It was one of the first videos.
Though they had hits, quite a few hits, they still seemed like an underground band to me. you know, a song like Magic Carpet Ride, the whole middle freak out part.
Green, yellow, and pink sound waves flash past rapidly. John examines a stone figurine on a pedestal as a duplicate of the figurine, a bunny figurine, and a wooden figurine scroll past. John examines a fluffy orange toy on the pedestal as a duplicate of the toy scrolls past. As he walks away with the figurine, the color inverts and its figure multiplies. The statue of a boy wearing goggles comes into focus. The image flickers as John walks past an oil lamp on the spinning pedestal.
It was pretty hectic, but thank God, everybody was into some kind of drugs to relieve the tension.
The band walks across an airport apron in Hawaii in 1969. John, wearing a lei, carries Sean.
I remember the first time we played in Hawaii. They're all the long-haired Hawaiian kids. We're doing great, and we were there for 2 nights. And then I realized, there's a bunch of guys right there with custom-made baseball caps that said, Steppenwolf Gunboat. Oh, we talked to some of these guys. I said, who are you? Well, we're back from Vietnam. We just got off the troop carrier, and we're here because we love your music.
A troop carrier flies past a beach.
Many years later.
In the present, John sits in the interview room.
In St. Louis, my bus driver says, there's a drunken veteran who keeps saying he has to see you because you saved his life. So, what?
Troops disembark in aircraft.
Talk to this guy, and he's coming apart. I was in a platoon in Vietnam, and gunfire erupted.
The troops approach a forest. A soldier makes a call.
I had my little cassette recorder, and I wanted to divert the enemy's attention and gunfire. So I turned on the cassette at maximum volume.
The troops carry a wounded soldier.
And then I flung that device in the opposite direction, and it was playing Born to be Wild. And I said, well, quite a story, but it could have been anybody's cassette. Song. Said, now you don't understand. For the rest of my life, I will I will know it's your song.
In archival footage, troops load a wounded soldier into an aircraft in Vietnam, and the aircraft takes flight. Steppenwolf performs in a TV studio.
John Kay did write some really good lyrics reflecting on what was going on. And
he's a wordsmith. I mean, I'm saying that in a very positive way. So the way he would talk to the audience, in his wonderful articulate quality, I admired that. I mean, this is second language.
John bends forward on stage, listening to the band play.
The music started to connect on a deeper level than, oh, I remember that hit. I used to dance with my girlfriend to it. We were more than sonic wallpaper.
I never felt that Steppenwolf were posers. You know, I didn't feel like they were trying to capitalize on the times. I felt that they were a result of the times. They felt like they were riding the wave of society. And there was darkness starting to come around.
It was controversial. He likes to write commentary on the times, and whether it's social issues or political issues. And I think in some ways that may have even hurt them at that time.
I mean, even my father, who was normally very, very pro-freedom of speech, he told me when I was a kid, I don't know, I think some of these bands like the Steppenwolf maybe shouldn't be on the radio.
A light shines on Steppenwolf's album, Monster, archival footage of a large house plays.
This is in Laurel Canyon, 9050. I bought the house with Steppenwolf royalties. There's my mom and dad. What are they doing in the movie? They're looking around and she's smoking. My mom is smoking. I can't believe it. My dad, he's so excited. He's first time in Hollywood. And there he is. He just put a lid on a trash can. There's another trash, three trash cans out of a Jaguar. Are you kidding? What's going on? Wait a minute. There's someone in a trash can. Randy. Randy's coming out of a trash can.
Randy and Nick's mother smile with their arms around each other.
His parents were reserved. They were from a group of elite military people. Well, his dad, he had a giant table map downstairs in the basement, and he would get in full regalia and go down there and push the boats around with this long stick. You know, like you can't take the Navy out of the guy. I don't know. It was, he was such an odd character himself.
Clips flash past. Nick's father in an armchair. Nick filming and Nick playing golf.
I think in general, they didn't really want him to be an artist. They wanted him to do something with his life that was more along the lines of a career. Because since his father was such a career man. And, you know, Nick was always going to be an artist of one kind or another.
Band films a music video on a train. Nick sings.
I remember that song, and nobody wanted me to sing it. It's got lovely. The word lovely doesn't sound like hell, trash, shit, dump, barbed wire, dusty, you know, sharp, blending knives on fire. And so it says lovely, lovely.
John smokes a cigarette. Goldie plays the organ. Later they smile and laugh together. Sunlight illuminates Goldie's voluminous hair.
It was a mixed bag. You know, we had a great time. Many, many times. And other times when you should have gotten more sleep, you know, you lose track of what's really important. You can get derailed by your own personal lifestyle habits, you know.
John slouches against a chair on a train. Goldie sits next to him, yawning.
Goldie, unfortunately, when he took acid, he was the wrong guy to take it. He had a lot of cooped up guilt complexes because he had been married, had two children that he left to join the Steppenwolf. It's all buried back there, and LSD can unlock that.
I like Goldie. We shared rooms together. That probably wasn't a good idea. We painted it purple and black. He knocked on my door, and I answered it, and he was all bloody. Goldie looked like he had been hit by a truck. How did you get all bloody? What's the problem? He said, it's a long story. I flew my hand glider into a cactus tree.
A hand glider flies over mountains. Goldie runs down a steep slope and then spins in a circle as the rest of the band looks on.
Goldie was out there, and Nick was Nick.
Nick, fully clothed, jumps off a second-story railing into a hotel pool. He climbs out and jumps in again. Then he gets out, picks up a lawn chair, and falls backwards into the water. The band performs on a colorful set in a TV studio. Nick wears a royal blue bandana. Jerry wears a black hat with a band of large crystals and a metallic shirt. Goldie wears a sparkly pink paisley shirt. Michael wears a bright yellow shirt. John wears a black outfit.
Nick was super, super flamboyant and sort of like a cross-dresser. He's very sort of fluid. I don't think John, although John has a really good sense of humor too, really appreciated Nick for what that brought to Steppenwolf. Nick is fluid and John is grounded. Nick's focus was like, I love playing music. I'm having a good time. I'm a magical little creature.
Nick wears a headband while riding a horse.
And it wasn't as dark and it wasn't as deep. I mean, you know, the Hell's Angels were their biggest fans. So they had like a lot of biker and hard dudes. And then there was this element of Nick, which was very different.
He wanted us to look like soldiers from a different planet. Like a United States of America black leather marching band. I said, everybody is entitled to do whatever they want in this band, don't we? Don't we have that right, Mr. Fur? Oh, doggone Fur, he'll kick you out of the band.
John stares ahead in a black and white photo.
I think he had that German discipline, and it was difficult for some people to, I think, live up to the expectations that he wanted from a well-working band.
So here we are back in New York at Bill Graham's Fillmore East, and it's Easter. We're ready to play. I'm looking around, and to my right is Nick, and all he has on is a sequined jockstrap and a pair of bunny ears, big ones, like this. And he is stoned out of his mind, and he notices that his bass, rather, is out of tune. He comes over to me and says, can you tune? This is in front of the audience. Can you tune the bass, man? I was about to kill him, but, not in front of everybody. Anyway, we managed to get through that show. But then I went looking for him after the show, and he was smart enough to have quickly run out of the fire exit or whatever. And the next day at the airport, basically said, this is the last gig you will have played with Steppenwolf.
That was only a part of it. It was mainly because he wanted total control of everything. He saw me as a threat.
Once they started separating out the individuals from the bands is when all the trouble started. It's taking the purity of what originated the beginning of them coming together and just turning it into something else, which, art shifts and changes, and that's what it is.
It seems like they were together for a long time, but it really wasn't. They would replace one person and then it would be two people. Steppenwolf had so many iterations of members.
The band poses on the cover of Seven.
It morphed a little bit into John Kay and Steppenwolf ultimately.
Cameron holds a copy of a Steppenwolf record.
Skullduggery.
Good album cover.
Alice and Bob look at copies of the record.
This is the last Steppenwolf record, and it's 1976.
I really like that first song on there. It was right towards the end of their career, but that song I thought had a cool, almost like Deep Purple vibe to it. Really good drumming.
The grayscale cover features a jawless skull sitting on a reflective surface with its own upside-down reflection below it.
Great title, Train of Thought. Life is a gamble, pass it on. Here's a great title again, Sleep, all leading to lip service. The forgotten and treasured instrumental that ends Skullduggery.
Green and red lights shine around the skull.
It's disco R&B. It's interesting that they're pushing boundaries.
The light changes colors while swirling in circles around the skull and its reflection.
We were a little bit adrift at this point. We weren't really sure what our focus was musically and everything else.
I think that the personalities showed up in the 70s. Alice was an entirely different entity than Bowie. Bowie was entirely different than Elton. Iggy. Everybody had an image now. Steppenwolf didn't really have that signature look.
Alice, in dramatic eyeliner, poses with a snake.
They're trying to develop their imagery, just like Alice Cooper with the, you know, dark eyes and all like that.
We went a little bit in that direction. With hindsight, we never should have. And we're talking about a period where Peruvian marching powder, also known as cocaine, was prevalent, you know, everywhere.
It didn't work. It just was not much, you know, response.
The band wears metallic costumes while performing at a concert.
I had kind of run out of energy, you know, constant touring, writing, rehearsing. We were short on material. I ran out of ideas, and I wanted a break. I wanted to be with my family, with daughters growing up. So I said, listen, maybe it's time for the Wolf to retire.
Los Angeles, 1977. In archival footage, John and Sean smile broadly on a ski lift. Sean waves her oversized rainbow gloves. John waves while walking on their snowy lawn. Jutta, Sean, and John sing in their living room.
Goldie, pick up the phone. It's me, Nick. Goldie, call me, okay? Talk to me, okay? Because you and I were in the Steppenwolf.
The deal with John Kay was this. I can use the name Steppenwolf, providing I pay him 5% of every date we do.
They even got a younger singer to put on the glasses and some leathers and go out of Steppenwolf.
Tom Pagan, ex-singer Steppenwolf, 1977 to 79.
Originally from New York City, raised in the Bronx. The blood that runs inside me is Puerto Rican. I would play little bars, little cowboy bars, just me and my guitar. I had to audition with the guys, but I think that I was the only one that auditioned. Goldie was the one that suggested that I buy some leather clothing. Yeah, no. I don't know if I even want to show this, but...
In a photo, Tom wears a leather vest and a wrist cuff.
Okay. This is actually my favorite. This is where I try to intimidate people. This was...
In a photo, Tom stares with a steely expression.
I think we went into the studio a couple of times, and, you know, we laid down some tracks, but nothing ever came of it. Yeah, it was just touring.
A concert ticket for The Return of Steppenwolf and a photo of the band posing outside a tour van scroll past. John rides in the back of a car.
Meantime, we're getting all these reports, you know, okay, they just played in South Carolina. And the Southern boys, when they found out that this was not John Kay and the legitimate Steppenwolf, and the guys on stage, particularly Goldie, was drunk and the performance was horrible. There was gunfire.
He looks at his cell phone and taps the screen.
The name had been so badly damaged. There were times when I would just get so angry, I contemplated, you know, illegal means of putting an end to this. You know, we had friends in areas where they said, does this guy need to be hurt? You need somebody to pay him a visit? You know, perhaps you don't need all these fingers. And so you have a fantasy of handing out some real serious pain. And then things got ugly between Nick and Goldie, and they split up, and they had each of them have their own separate bogus Steppenwolf bands. So I said, I've had it. I don't care about anything. I'm going out as John Kay and Steppenwolf. We're going to fight them everywhere where they've been. We're going to go and, you know, in other words, compete with them out in the marketplace.
An album cover and a concert ad scroll past.
I've always given him a tremendous amount of credit in that, you know, they went from playing arenas and stadiums and all of that to when I started to remember going to shows, he was playing the tiny sort of dive clubs I always thought it must have been incredibly difficult and humbling to go from, you know, arenas back to the very, very dumbed down version of that.
John and his band climb out of a van with a sticker reading budget on the door.
Our job every night is to deliver the goods on stage and send these people home smiling. They are not above being in this shithole. Neither should we be. Make sure that we play the hits exactly like the original records, because that's how it's embedded in the memory banks of the fans. They don't want you to mess with it.
A judge in Los Angeles decided to vote in John's favor and say, no, you can't use the name Steppenwolf because John Kay already owns it.
The notice reads, no one other than John Kay and Steppenwolf, billed only in that exact manner, is authorized to use the name Steppenwolf. Footage of Nick rowing a canoe plays.
As long as the jobs keep coming in, I keep things moving along. I started a band called Timberwolf.
Photos of Nick's five-man band Timberwolf scroll past.
This guy, I gave him a check after the show. He says he wants cash. I said, I don't have any cash. He said, so he pulled out a gun and said, get me some cash. Are you kidding? I had to go find, like, $50 to pay him. Those were the good old days.
A stylized wolf appears above the word Star Wolf.
Star Wolf, okay. Easy man. We went to the Stillwater Correctional Facility. It's a major prison. Well, we went there to play. And I got the newspaper, the cover, front page, and all they got. We're the top now of what, the prison circuit. Let's play some more prisons. And then it went down to Lone Wolf. Lone Wolf. That's a good name. I like Lone Wolf. Great guitarist, great drums, great singer, great keyboardist. We got booked all over the place.
A poster advertises Nick St. Nicholas and the Lone Wolf.
After a couple of years, it went from small clubs to large clubs to small theaters to medium-sized theaters to amphitheaters, you know, and so on. And so it was a step-by-step process to rebuild Steppenwolf.
John Kay and Steppenwolf perform for a huge crowd at the 1987 Farm Aid Festival. John swings his mic stand around. And head out on the highway, looking for adventure. If I ever come somewhere, get out and go make it happen.
Why are bands from the late 60s still playing? There was a thing with, I called it, if you were a lifer. If you're a lifer, you're a guy that's gonna go until you can't go anymore.
There's a lot of love for Steppenwolf out there, and I think why their music remains present, if you meet them at the crossroads of, like, right now, it's authentic. It's not a toy band with toy emotions. They're actually sincere.
A mansion sits on a road on a rolling desert landscape dotted with similar properties. Inside, Mars walks through the cavernous living room.
No, I don't play any instrument at all anymore. Like, you see that stuff over there. There are little holes in the travertine floor, and we're patching the holes, and it's just one thing after another. So there's no time for music.
Black leather outfit while performing.
I kind of thought you'd get married forever. I was the only person that I knew that was monogamous. It's probably what split us up. During that time, I really, you know, was so young and so shy. I did observe a lot.
Randy St. Nicholas became one of Hollywood's most influential photographers. Framed black and white photos of Barbra Streisand, Prince, and Whitney Houston hang in her home. John Kay and Steppenwolf perform energetically at the festival. John dances and swings his microphone stand around. People in the audience clap and pump their arms.
I just feel very lucky that I got to work with them and be part of their legacy, because you know what? Steppenwolf's not going away. Their music's going to be around for a long time. Simple as that.
1,000 Rockin', Stade de France, Paris, 2022. Lights flash as 1,000 musicians, separated into blocks according to their instrument, perform in a packed stadium. Nick, wearing sunglasses, a helmet, and leathers, climbs onto a motorcycle in his driveway. He starts the motorcycle, pushes the kickstand up, and drives forward. The wind blows through his hair as he races along the coast. Goldie McJohn, 1945 to 2017. In black and white footage, Goldie energetically plays the organ with Steppenwolf. In color footage, with his hair long and white, he plays the keyboard with another band. Jerry Edmonton, 1946 to 1993. Jerry wears a bucket hat and an open jacket while drumming with Steppenwolf. In 2010, John Kay sold all his music industry assets to help sustain the Wildlife Foundation that he founded with his wife in Kenya. John Kay and Steppenwolf performed their final show in 2018.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great 4th of July, what's left of it. Have a wonderful summer. We sure as hell hope to see some of you again someday.
John and Nick had barely been in contact for more than 50 years. When this documentary premiered at the Munich Film Fest in July 2024, they met again for the very first time in a very long while. Clips from the film festival scroll past. John and Nick talk closely, embrace, pose, and have dinner in a restaurant. Jutta puts her hand on Nick's back. Then they sit together in the theater. Produced by Lisa M. Roth and Marcus Hills. A Resolution Pictures and Luna Beach TV and Media GmbH co-production. After the screening, Nick and John address the audience.
So let's not waste time with bad feelings and smoke the peace pipe.
Right? That's beautiful. Yeah.
Nick and John hold hands while climbing down the steps from the stage. Described video, Set Incorporated, 2024.